Hello and welcome to Heroes in Our Midst. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop, and I'm looking forward to us all getting to know today's guest, Craig Brown. Craig seems to be one of those guys who never wants to stop learning so that he can keep figuring out how to help others better. He has a Bachelor of Science in Psychology and Human Resource Management and an MBA from the University of the West Indies, Mona. He also completed a Master's in Kinesiology and Recreation Management at the University of Manitoba, with a focus in sports psychology, under the supervision of Dr. Leisha Strawn, who has already been one of our heroes. And to add to his classroom learning, he has volunteered as a student sports psychology consultant with the Bison Women's Soccer Team and with Valor FC. Craig's path to where he is today in the field of sports psychology was longer than most, literally. He was born in Jamaica and eventually ended up in the banking industry there. But ultimately, with the support of his incredible wife, he gave that all up to come to Canada in 2017 to pursue what he loves, helping athletes navigate the challenges related to their athletic experiences. And the fact that he's a relative newcomer to Canada himself, he has landed in exactly the right place to give voice to the experiences of newcomer athletes and to make a difference in the lives of others. So what is it like to be new here? To leave family and home behind to pursue your passion? To grow up in Jamaica? That's where we started with Craig.
Growing up was just life. You enjoyed life as you went, right? Sport was always a part in some way, some shape or form. In prep school / primary school, I played table tennis and I swam for my school. Then I dropped that in high school. It was too cool for sport. But I was still a fan of just sport because we grew up on Michael Jordan and the Bulls from the early 90s. So my whole family, we would spend nights, no matter how late the games were, we would be in front of the TV until the games are done. So we had a good run throughout the 90s with basketball. And then my brother started playing basketball. And of course, when you have an older brother who plays a sport and you want to be like them, you just follow right behind. So I ended up starting playing basketball in high school. I played for my high school just for a couple of years. But after that, I put down participating in sport. Everything was just recreational going from there. But I still inhaled sport. So I'd watch soccer. I'd watch football. I'd watch basketball. I'd watch cricket. Even if cricket's going on at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd be watching a test match in Australia or a test match in New Zealand or India, Bangladesh, etc. So I just became a very big fan of consuming sport. Once the Olympics were on, once tennis was on, the days of Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras, etc., that I'd just be glued to some form of sport. So I just became a massive enthusiast. And then in my latter days in high school, my friends got really involved with the English Premier League, the soccer leagues in Europe, and they drew me in. So that added another sport. And my dad used to play soccer, actually. Wow. So sport for me was just always one of those things that I love, even before coming to Canada. I watched some hockey games. I've watched a bit of curling. I will sit and watch a pool, a billiards tournament. I'll watch golf. I'll watch sport. Once it's sport, I'll watch extreme sports, winter sports, summer sports. It's sport. I'll watch chess. I'm always intrigued by strategy. I'm intrigued by the stories behind everything. I'm intrigued by just understanding the various concepts, and I appreciate it. In terms of whether it was a plan in my life, in terms of a career, mm-hmm. it was never a thought until maybe my 20s and early 30s, late 20s, early 30s. I started with psychology. I really wanted to do law in school. So psychology was just one of those things that I kind of fell back on. So I started with psych. I said, you know what? It looked interesting. Let me finish it instead of transferring to law school. Let me finish with psychology. After that, I just went straight into the workplace, which tends to happen sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Then I ended up in business. The stereotypical thing of once you start, you never go back kind of happened to me. I got into business, started to settle down, started to think about a career, went into banking. So I ended up being in banking, whether in customer service or human resources, for 11 years. So that little, oh, I'm just going to stop here. I need to earn some money after university. I need to start figuring out my life. ended up being an 11-year pause in banking. Even during that time, I pursued an MBA. But the funny thing, and I'll tie all of this back into why I ended up doing sports psychology later on, I ended up doing an MBA. And it wasn't until like my wife and I decided that, okay, we're going to take a chance and like try moving to Canada. For me, she always said, let's try moving to another country. Let's just try something different. And I said, no, I love my tropical life a little too much. I'm not going anywhere to freeze. But things just started to change in my life. You know, those wheels started to turn. And then I said, you know what? Let's try it. We checked out coming to Canada. And then we applied for their express entry program, which is for us to come over as permanent residents. We came over and it's just been no looking back since. When we were coming, I said, you know what? I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll just go back into banking. And she said, no, we have the opportunity now to start over. I saw that you were good at what you were doing. I saw that you were successful. I saw that you had your ups and your downs. But at this point in time, we have the opportunity to start over our lives. If you're starting over your life, what would you see yourself doing? And the only two answers I could come up with were either counseling psychology or sports psychology. So with that in mind, I said, okay, let me check out a few programs. And I checked out a few. And the one here at the University of Manitoba really stood out through kinesiology, working with Dr. Leisha Strawn. And that's just been the story since. In terms of like my passion behind it, as a massive sport enthusiast, and that's where that part comes in. I've spent so many years watching athletes, watching the dynamics. And of course, you have the sports psychology part of it, thinking about strategy, thinking about persons who succeed or make a mistake in a particular point or at a key moment, and how could I have helped with that? What could I have done differently? But for example, if I were there with the team, if I were there at the tournament with the athlete, if I were working with the athletes, what could I have done to help them? But the one that really drove me, or the things that really drove me, were the instances where I saw athletes struggle with mental health. And of course, especially coming up in the 90s, even in the 2000s, sometimes even now to a degree, speaking about your mental health is not something that you speak about openly in many countries still. So I just thought to myself, if only I were there, what could I have done? And that's been that driving force now to say, okay, I'm not just a fan of sport. I can do something about that. I can pour myself into something that will, I may never be a Cal Botterill. I may never be some of the big names that will come up in sports psychology. But if I could make a difference in one athlete's life, then all of it would have been worth it. And then looking back into my degrees, when I studied psychology, I did human resource management. When I did my MBA, I still focused in human resource management. And in doing the degree at the U of M and focusing on sports psychology, I recognized that the connecting trend between all three was that desire to make the lives of others better. Huh. Because I started studying human resource management because I saw so many people who were just unhappy at work. And I thought to myself, what could I do to help others? What could I study? What career path could I take to help persons just love their jobs better? I recognize you can't make people love their jobs better, but you can play a role in helping them to navigate the highs and the lows of that experience. And that's what's connecting me now to where I am and where I find myself.
Now, when you came in 2017, and may I also comment on the incredible wife that you have behind you saying, no way, man, if you would, I've never heard, you know, I don't know if I've ever heard that. If you could start your life over, that's a great question for anyone in life to ask. Mm-hmm. If you could start over, what would you do? Like, were you surprised she said that? Was that like a, are you saying this? Are we really, we're really doing this? Like, was there any element of like, are we doing this?
There is more of an element of, should I be doing this? Because that's her personality. She just naturally cares and she just naturally wants to see others do well. She has been, I don't want to say my number one fan, but she's been that person that's been there the whole way. at the times when the struggles were there, when I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. You have that one person that says, hey, you can do this. They have no clue what you're doing, but they're just like, I know you and I believe in you. And yeah. We're going to do this no matter what. So it was more of a thought process of, oh, wait, she is actually supporting all of this. So now the ball is in my court. What am I going to do?
So in 2017, you come to this brand new country. And what were the challenges for you? Was there a challenge being new, coming into the University of Manitoba and into the program? And what were some of the challenges you faced doing that?
There are quite a few. First of all, we have no relatives in Canada overall. So coming was that the proverbial step of faith, where when we decided to come, it was literally, we're packing up everything. We're leaving everything. We're good at home. We're good in Jamaica, not just the weather. Like we were happy, we were fine. It was really one of those cases where we said, you know what, let's just try something different. Let's really launch out on this step of faith. So first of all, coming and not knowing anyone, that was really tough. The good thing is that we have friends who moved to Nova Scotia and they have friends here. So in hearing that we were coming here, they connected us with those friends here. And that started a network of persons who just welcomed us to Canada and to Winnipeg or Manitoba in general. And that was tough, to miss home, to not have anything close to home, to come to a brand new country and to really just try and figure out a totally different system. But we've had so many persons from my advisor, Dr. Strawn, and there are persons that I won't call their names, but different families and even the church that we attend now, that they've really taken us in and have helped us to settle. And that's made a big difference. It's adjusting to the food in particular, adjusting to a different way of life, adjusting to having to change your personality to your degree. Because as you mentioned, I spent most of my life in a different country, just a different way of doing things. And I've had to adjust that a bit. Let's not mention the weather. We all know the weather is one thing.
It's a challenge.
it's a challenge. You just roll with it. But again, even with that, it was someone that we encountered who's been here for decades that have said, you know what? I've been here for this long and I'm not dead. I'm not frozen. You can do it. And then we said, it clicked. We're just like, yeah, we can do this. No matter how cold it gets, we've been outside together in minus 50 and we've trotted along. We've been in the bus stop without the bus shelter and just stood and rocked to keep ourselves warm. We've had those experiences. But I think with each challenge that has come and being able to navigate them, that's helped to make it stronger or helped to make us stronger and helped us to see that, okay, we can do this. Another challenge, there's not really much that I encountered with school. I think things just getting used to a different system again. Mm-hmm. The last time I studied would have been in 2009. Yeah. Then to come again and study in 2017, it's just getting acquainted with some of the processes and the content again and just learning new content. And then that doubt that you start to say to yourself sometimes, do I really want to do this? Wouldn't it be easier to just like go back to what I'm used to instead of having to push this hard? But then when I started to get into my research and started to get into some of the concepts and started to really enjoy the experience here, it actually lit a fire that made me want to just, no matter what the difficulties were that I faced, just push on. Now, in my research and in some of the groups that I've worked with, that's not the experience for all newcomers. You have many newcomers that have had many other struggles, but for us, we haven't had it that bad. And that's a testament to a lot of the support that's been around us.
Speak to your thesis, and your master's thesis talk was about newcomers to Canada and their experience in sports. So you were marrying your experience of coming and then those that come. And I know now, being out of my sport of volleyball, but I see newcomers all the time and mm-hmm. even kids who are recruited specifically, like you're allowed a certain number of foreign students to come and play on your university team and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I wonder sometimes about that. Sometimes I think from our viewpoint, we just think, oh, like we sort of almost put them in another category, right? Because if you're from another country, you must be amazing. Or if the coach went to that length to get you to come here. And when you talk about newcomers and their experience in sport, are you talking about that level? Or are you talking about any level? And what do you think is the challenge? I mean, it just seems like it must be a dream come true for them to come and play sport in Canada, but there's got to be challenges. And, you know, that's what you sort of dove into.
Yeah, I definitely focused a lot on the experiences of newcomer athletes at the varsity level. And you're right, for many persons coming. And again, when we say newcomers, it could be persons who moved here with their families, but they played sport back home and they decided to continue playing here, or they decided to take up sport while coming here, or they came here for the purpose of pursuing sport. And that all of that is true. They enjoy it. It's an opportunity to realize a dream. But you marry that with just so many different levels of concerns and experiences. So it's how you play your sport. One is controlled or is dictated to you by your culture. So the way I play hockey might be different here compared to in the States, compared to in Europe. The way I play soccer might be different in North America, Central America, South America, the Caribbean, Europe. The way you play your sport is really, really influenced by where you come from. So when you come to a different system, you now have to learn what the terminology is. You now have to navigate what differences there may be in how you play your sport. So you may play your sport one way and now you're being told to do something else. Speaking personally, I can think of the athletes from Jamaica. We do strength and conditioning, but strength and conditioning is emphasized even more in North America. So when an athlete is used to a particular level of strength and conditioning, and now in order to make it, you have to basically change your routine. You have to change the way you do things just to make it. That can cause an added stress, as well as if you're on a scholarship, you need to maintain that scholarship. So you need to do what it takes, no matter how comfortable you are with it, to maintain that scholarship. You're navigating a new school system. So you have to now look at maintaining your scholarship and maintaining your grades and learning adequately. Some persons have shared not having the proper nutrition, not having the proper support systems. For athletes who have family here, it's easier. But for those who have family back home, it's really tough. You've had athletes share their experiences of falling asleep on Skype with their families in a different country because they just got to that point where they missed home. You have athletes that have spoken about the experience of just feeling isolated because remember, you're still people and you're still trying to get used to a new system. I think one of the main things that came out, and it's not all bad because many of the athletes that I've worked with or spoken with, I should say, have hinted that, okay, they've really settled into life here and things have been good, but they have had those changes because the differences in cultures actually is more significant. And you have persons who just said, you know what, I've just gone with the flow so that I could actually make it feel a bit easier and make it feel a bit better so that I can do what I came to do and then move on. So you've had both sides. You've had persons just trying to navigate moving to a new country and all the challenges that come with that. And then working, trying to succeed in sport and in school and the challenges that come with that. And sometimes the combination of those challenges can be overwhelming. And again, for many who come from countries that don't emphasize mental health and don't emphasize speaking about mental health, they carry the weight of everything and try to figure it out themselves, or some crumble under the pressure or the weight of it. But you do have many that have gotten so much support from family back home, support from family here, support from just the loving community or the teams that they're a part of or the sports systems that they're a part of that have been here and that have encouraged them to do well and that have helped them to navigate that change. But you do have some that have faced discrimination. You've had some that have faced prejudice. It was heartbreaking listening to some of the stories when you have an athlete that says that persons have shouted to them, why are you here? We don't need you here. Go back to your own country. And you have athletes who have just said, I feel alone all the time. I don't know where is home anymore. It's just, I took this project up as a point of interest, said, you know what, let me see what I can do to find out more. But the more I got into it, the more my heart broke and the more I wanted to do more, because I recognized that newcomer athletes, newcomers in general to Canada, there are a lot of positives that happen, but there are a lot of negatives that they go through. Mm-hmm. And many don't know where to go for help. And for many, the places that they think they could go for help are some of the places that are causing some of that consternation and concern. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm continuing the work that I'm doing. I've defended my thesis, the whole nine yards, but I'm still pressing to see what can I do to make that transition experience, not easier, but to help newcomer athletes navigate that transition to life here in Canada.
I can see that would just spur you on to continue to research, but then also to get in on that field and just to really be able to make a concrete difference. And I think too, like when people say they feel isolated because they come from somewhere else, I think that's really hard for us to even understand, like from your experience, what can people around some athletes that if someone's listening and says, well, I think I have someone on my team or mm-hmm. I think I'm coaching someone who is going through this and we're doing what we can, but I think they're still feeling out of place because we can't change the color of our skin to match theirs. Mm-hmm. We're the only person of color on our team and all those tensions that now are in the world. What would you say to people on how we can help those people or make that a better transition for newcomers to our sport and to our country?
Yeah, what's come out in the research, in general, the academic research, as well as in just my discussions with newcomer athletes, sometimes it's just that leaving that space for communication open and recognizing that we're not all the same, not in a bad way, mm-hmm. but in a way that, okay, the way we know things or the way we do things are different. So it's giving each other that space to fail, get back up, just like in coaching, giving each other that space to learn and creating an environment where there can be an exchange of cultural learning. So in one sense, it can be a Canadian saying, okay, you have somebody new, and I'll touch on something else soon. You have someone new on your team from a different country. You don't have to be best friends on your first date, but take that opportunity just to get to know the person, just to show the person around, to let that person know that they can feel free to come to you. And also try to get to know that person's culture also. In my research, the way that has looked, you've had an athlete, a newcomer athlete that has said that, okay, that person had teammates that said, okay, I recognize your English isn't as strong. Let me teach you. Let me guide you. You're new to this school. Okay, these are some of the things to look out for. Oh, you're doing that course. I am doing that course. We can be in groups together. Let's do homework together as teammates. And also you've said, okay, what language do you speak? Teach me some of your language. If I'm playing a sport together, okay, we have this term that we normally use in sport. What is it in your country? How can I use it on the field or in practice to help you feel more welcome? So it's that allowing for that exchange. It's that environment that says, okay, I want to learn from you and I want to show you as much as I can to make sure that you feel as if you belong and you're welcome. And of course, in the research, it says that starts with the coach. It starts with the coach and the team creating that sort of environment where cultural learning and cultural exchange is welcomed. So that's the kind of encouragement I would give to ensure that you create a culture that allows for that exchange, but give the opportunity to others to fail, to fall short. Don't just enforce a particular practice on an individual, mm-hmm. but for anyone coming into your team, try to explain how things are done. Mm-hmm. Try to understand what differences may exist culturally, and then try to see how you can mend those differences. And even if there are some differences that can't be mended, still create a space of understanding, not just tolerance, because tolerance can be negative. Mm-hmm. Tolerance can say, okay, I'll put up with you, but try to create a space of understanding that says, okay, if this person doesn't want to high five, that might be something from their culture, but it doesn't mean that they don't like us, or it doesn't mean that they don't like me. It's just not something that they're used to. So I'll give them time. Whether or not they high five, it doesn't change who they are as my teammate. And the thing that I remembered in speaking was, it's not just about newcomers to Canada. I've come to recognize that the cultures are different in each province here in Canada. And the cultures are different within the various cities in some of the provinces. So using Manitoba, somebody coming to Winnipeg to play sport from northern Manitoba might have a different experience and understanding. So when you create that environment of welcoming, cultural learning and understanding, regardless of who you are, once you are new to our team, we want to facilitate helping you to settle in, as well as understanding your perspective so that we can work together. That will be helpful for newcomers in any way, shape, or form to any sport program.
It's pretty exciting to see we don't have to be the same, but man, can we draw on each other and bring each other in to be stronger in the end. What's your end goal, Craig? Like what do you want to be or do with this?
It's something that I've been mulling over. I've been mulling the decision to go into academia, been mulling the decision to pursue further studies in psychology, so I can actually do this kind of work full time as a licensed psychologist. It's definitely the desire and the goal. As you mentioned, it's one of the few things that I've been passionate about when I think about a career going forward, because it blends just that desire to help persons, but it blends that love of sport and it blends everything that I'm very interested in. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I would want to see myself do for the rest of my life, be on the sideline with those teams, or just be a consultant with a program, whatever it might be. But this is definitely where I'd want to see myself.
How important is it to you, and how would you deal with it when you've done some work with, like you said, with the soccer team for a few years now? How do you balance away from the newcomer thing now, just sports psychology, even what we're doing now, talking about the human behind who you are and what's inside of you? And we've talked to athletes and we want to know what makes them tick and what's important to them. But still very important to so many athletes, and in sport, there's always winning and losing. How do you balance that when a coach says, okay, we want to win, you want to work with our team, sure, make sure they're okay. You got to get this kid okay so that he can help me win. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You have so much to offer. So how do you balance that, and how do you envision that all working together?
Applied sports psychology is always tricky, because I've done some research on ethics related to it, and I've been involved in it myself, because you're balancing responsibility to players, to the coaching staff, as well as to the organization to which you're employed or accountable to. So they'll always tell you, and it's something that's simple, just make sure everybody's on the same page. For me, being a sports psychologist, and I've learned this listening to Dr. Strong and listening to Adrian, it's not just about, oh, I'm here for the athlete, but I'm here for the coaches too. I've made it a point of duty to not just show up, for example, to practices, or just focus on the athletes. I've actually kind of gotten very much integrated into the coaching staff at Bison Soccer. So for example, now I still have a weekly meeting with one of the coaches since the pandemic started, just to check in and talk soccer, just to be there. So what I would encourage any sports psychologist to do, and again, I'm still new to all of this, so the veterans can share so much more, but just to make sure that there's an open communication at all levels. I speak to the athletes, or when we work with the athletes, we ask them, okay, at the start of the season, what is it that you would want us to focus on? We ask the coaches, what is it that you want us to focus on? And we start to blend those in any delivery that we're doing. And as we progress, we continue just to check in. How are things going with our athletes? We check in with our coaches. Okay, coaches, how is everything, you know, in terms of what we've been working on? Have you been seeing a difference? We continue to maintain that accountability and keep the channels open. That way, it allows us to pour into both, and it allows us to be on the same page, because once you're perceived to be offering value by the coaching staff, they will continue to provide even more support. And the athletes, once they perceive that you are of value, they will continue to let you know what they need. And that's really what we're there to do. We're that balance that tries to ensure that a healthy environment exists within the entire team, not just for the athletes, but for the coaches. So when we have sessions, sometimes the coaches are very much involved in those sessions. When we have concepts that we've worked on, we explain them to the coaches, and we let the coaches know what we've been working on and what we plan to do. So it's that mutual understanding that goes forward. Sometimes there are coaching staff that may not be as welcoming. I think in those cases, it's really just to continue to create that environment, or that opportunity to have dialogue, just to show that we're here for the entire team, not just for the benefit of the athlete, what we want to help to create a culture within the sporting organization or within the team or within that particular discipline that facilitates the not just mental health, but the well-being of everyone involved. Because if that well-being is there, that is one of the foundational steps to elite performance going forward.
Mm-hmm. Back to the newcomer thing in your line of work, have you ever felt alone? What was your experience coming into this whole line of research and into this world? How has that been for you personally as a newcomer to Canada and making your way here?
Well, there's still much of the world that I have to experience and know. I've been privileged to study under Dr. Lisha Strong. So she's a Black female coach and sports psychologist. Yeah. So that lens for me was just, oh yeah, it's very diverse. We're good. Everything is going well. We can fit in. It wasn't until I started speaking with other sports psychologists and just doing some of my own research and looking and saying, okay, who are the persons that are doing the work that I'm interested in? That you start to see that you may not have the amount of diversity that was once perceived by myself. But there has been a change, and there is continual change. So what I will say is, for me, they're wonderful persons within the field, fantastic, talented, experienced. I've attended Kyle's lectures. I've been on some of those Zoom meetings. I've been on some of those conferences, and I've seen so many persons doing such great work. I will just say that for me, it's been motivating to see that there is diversity. But from what I've seen, it encourages me to want to make sure that I do my part, so that I become a representative also, that I can be some sort of, not an example, but maybe an example for any newcomers that want to say, okay, I want to go to Canada and I want to work in sports psych. As a Black male, someone pointed out to me that, a Caucasian pointed out to me, and I'm being particular with my references, because I want to also be careful. I know we're living in heated times, but it was a Caucasian sports psychologist that pointed out to me that we don't have the level of representation and diversity that should be. And that was kind of shocking to me. Mm-hmm. And that said to me that, okay, not that, oh, we need to create diversity, but it just motivated me to want to do even more and to want to maybe blaze a trail for someone else coming up along the way that is thinking about this. And as it relates to working with newcomers, there's a lot of work being done even here in Manitoba related to working with newcomers and newcomers in sport. But that sports psychology angle is still something that probably needs to be examined or approached a little bit more.
I feel like sometimes when you deal with the heart of athletes, we can get so involved. And again, not just the winning and losing, but the involvement of it. And you're even getting involved in terms of, I don't know, what could be even bigger issues for athletes, even someone who grows up right here in Manitoba and in Canada, to play a varsity sport in that is already, like you've said, can be overwhelming. Then you add this. Does that sort of ring true for you that, whew, this could be some big stuff?
It does. At the same time, I think with what we do, and my wife will tell you just my perspective and my heart overall, I tend to pour myself out a little bit too much. So I am one of those persons that you need to say, okay, not stop caring, but you need to sleep or you need to take a break and not take on everything, because you can't carry the world on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as much overwhelmed when I get involved with athletes and see what they're going through, but it's more along the lines of, no matter how much I do, I think I'm burdened by the thought process that there's always more. Mm-hmm. There's always more that can be done. And there's always, that's probably a negative thing that my colleagues could probably help me with, but there's always this perception that no matter what I do, it's never enough. And no matter what I do, it's never good enough based on the volume of work that's needed or based on the depth of issues that you encounter or experience. So, I think at one point in time, I can speak to having to reach out to a senior sports psychologist to say, okay, I'm going through this right now. This is feeling a little weighty, a bit too much on my shoulders. And I don't think that's a good thing. And that person was able to say, okay, what is happening right now is that you need to just slow down. Or what is happening right now is that you probably just need a break. The issues will be there, or you can only do what you can do, but you just need coaching and guidance yourself. I don't think I'm overwhelmed by the concept of the issues that I face, but it's probably just taking them on a little bit too much without having an outlet myself to just say, okay, this is not defining me. The issues that I'm taking on, that I'm trying to help others through, they are not my personal burdens to carry, but I'm there to help facilitate and guide and facilitate others making that step to a positive move forward.
And I think sometimes psychologists, counselors, those people in your line of work, what you're doing, you're trying to make sure all these athletes are okay. And we just assume you guys are, well, then you must be okay if you're helping me be okay. So I love that you went there. I love that you went there and said, you know what? Yeah, I had to seek out some help myself and right. And just get on another track and then boom. And yeah, whatever comes, but it's got to start somewhere, right? Like what you're saying about diversity, helping newcomers and all of that, man, Craig, it's now that I've gotten to know you as well as I feel like I have, we're pretty happy to have a lot of that in your hands, starting that out and also carrying that on. So, thank you for sharing that story. Thank you for it, throughout your story, Craig. I can feel that your concern and your desire is to help others. Now, hey, tell us a little bit. You are here in Canada and do you still have family back in Jamaica? What's that like for you?
Oh, absolutely. It's hard sometimes because it's not easy to just jump on a plane and go back to Jamaica. Just plainly speaking, it can just be really expensive. As quote unquote close as it may be per se, it's just the Caribbean, but it's a really long trip. So it's hard not being there for the special moments or being there for the COVID is happening. And my parents are almost 70. They're still out and about every day. They're still busy people, but it's hard sometimes. And I think last year, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. So just to hear that diagnosis and then to see him go through the treatment and the surgery and not be there to walk him through that, that was really hard. But I think knowing that I have quite a bit of family back home is also helpful, so that I know that I do have a network that is there helping and supporting each other. And that's cheering me on at the same time. And it's been good to have my wife here. She being here has made a significant difference. If she weren't here, I think it would have been so much harder.
And let's talk a little bit about COVID and the athletes that you've been working with and that you've talked to. And how do you think this is affecting our young athletes? I just wonder what your thoughts are on that. And you have a calming way about you. Maybe you can sort of lead us into maybe how you think young athletes are doing.
There are so many levels to it. There's the kinesiology part of it, participation, et cetera, that's just saying, okay, our youth still need to be active. And that is also a part of mental health. We need to be moving. So with COVID, I think one of the main things is for those who were active, they're no longer active. So they may start feeling changes physically, and that may also impact their mood. There is also for those who were athletes, for example, and they were on teams, they no longer have that outlet or that avenue, or even just youth, just being in school, you don't have that connection, that network that was a part of what was your norm. There is also for athletes, the sense of loss. You have that loss of for many athletes, that athletic identity. Your concept of being an athlete defines who you are so much. Now you've lost a bit of that for many. Of course, you have teams practicing online, those who can still go out and train. But for the summer sports, there are many that can't do what they've known themselves or they've used to identify themselves or define themselves. There's also the sense of loss for just using U Sports, for example. The many teams that lost their season, those who were seniors, for example, and this would have been their year, just to have that closure, just to wrap up that chapter. Let's say if a team was preparing us, this is our year to win a championship. We've really been putting everything together, but this was going to be our year. you have the dynamic of trying to introduce new players, but yet still not have that ability to connect with them as best as possible. Mm-hmm. You have the other side of it that's not sport related. We still have school. Online school is just tough. We're not seeing our friends outside of school anymore. We're not able to go and do some of the things that we love outside of sport itself, just connecting, just going to the theater, just going out to eat. For some, they no longer have employment because they would have been supplementing their educational journey and athletic journey through working outside of school or even working at school. You have those who their own families have been influenced or impacted by COVID-19, whether they've gotten it or their family members have gotten it, or that they've lost family members or friends through COVID-19, or their parents are now without a job and there's a little bit of a stress around financial stability and emotional stability within the home. There's also something as simple as your routine, being able to get to school. You go to work, you go to practice. Now everything is just in this one space. Two or three people are trying to use the network and everybody has a class, or everybody has a meeting. Like, life has changed. Yeah. So I think what has happened for many of our athletes, no matter the age, there's just been an upheaval. There's been an emotional, psychological, physical upheaval. And I think it's just an opportunity for us to make sure that we check in with our athletes, to remember that they're also people, to make sure that their health and well-being come first. That as much as, for example, we want to get ready for the possibility of going back to the way things were, however that may look in our minds over the next coming year, what if it doesn't happen this year? What if it happens next year or the year after that? What if the way things are going to be done, what if that's going to change? How is it going to be impacting our athletes? How is it going to be impacting our youth? I think now is the perfect opportunity just to ensure that we are there for our youth and for our athletes. And it's just that conversation, that checking in to make sure that that mental health and well-being is sound and secure in a time like this. And some of the physical aspects come into it too, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's reaching out just to say, okay, you can go skating and let that be your cardio for the day, and that would also help with your mental health and your mood. I think now is just, with everything that's going on, it just presents the perfect opportunity to just to make sure that we create cultures where we check in on our athletes, no matter how young they are, just to make sure that they as human beings, yeah, are well and are managing and are okay. And then we can build everything else up on that foundation of mental health and wellness.
Fantastic. Craig, thank you for your words and thank you for your caring and your passion for what you're into. And I think we're all going to be looking forward to the difference you're going to be making on the sports psychology scene, no matter what path you take and no matter where it leads you. And I'm going to lead you into some rapid fire questions.
Sure.
Get to know you a little better. Some of these are pretty deep. Some of these are kind of just for fun. what is your favorite sound?
Oh, favorite sound would be laughter. I love hearing people laugh, and laughter just speaks happiness. Like that deep belly laugh. I just love hearing the sound of laughter.
What does being unapologetically human mean to you, and why is it important?
For me, being unapologetically human means that you're giving others the space to be themselves and creating an environment that allows others to fail and get back up in a reassuring and caring way. So for me, it's just understanding that we're all works in progress. So we're all part of this journey together. So if I can be patient with you and you can be patient with me, it allows us the space to learn, to grow, to make mistakes, to fall down. But it means that somebody's going to be there understanding, even if that person is you know, correcting us in a loving way, but they're understanding and they're willing to help us to grow and to become better people.
Awesome. What is something funny that's happened to you?
The first thing that comes to mind is when we just moved here, we were staying with friends in the Transcona area. So we were doing some shopping for like furniture, et cetera, trying to find a place. We were on Regent. So we would take the 47 to go to our friend's home. So we came out of we were in the store. We just downloaded the bus app. We said, okay, the bus is going to be here in 5 minutes. Of course, this is in deep winter. Let's just say that in the night in deep winter. the store's about to close. Let's head out to the bus stop. We headed out to the bus stop and we're dancing. Of course, we're still not used to it. We're still not used to this winter thing. And we got our coats and everything, but we were just dancing and just trying to stay warm. Then we see the bus finally coming along and we said, oh, that's our bus. Then all of a sudden, not in service. And then we just stood there saying, okay, another bus is going to come. And the buses kept passing. And we were just like, what? What's happening? Why are no buses stopping? We recognized that the bus stop that we were at, only the 47 stopped at that bus stop. And by the time I'll tell you, it's not 5 minutes. By the time we recognized that only the 47 stopped at that bus stop, we were there for maybe half an hour waiting on the next bus. So my wife and I just said, you know what? Let's do what we do. We started singing songs and dancing on the side of the road. And we were certain people were driving by and saying, who are these crazy people? So we would do all those extravagant dance moves from back home and we'd be singing to each other and the whole nine yards. And when we look back at it, by the time we got home, we were icicles. But we look back at it and we said, you know what? No matter how difficult things may get here, we're going to make it. We're going to make it together. And we're just going to sing and dance and laugh about it if we need to. Because you know what? We just made it through that.
What does hope mean to you?
It means that there's something to hold on to that you haven't yet attained, but that thing that will drive you to never give up and to keep going.
What is your biggest takeaway from the great pause that COVID has created?
I think the great pause has given us reason to pause. Mm. It's given us a lot more perspective on what's most important in our lives. And I think for me in particular, I can share that I just kept going like the Energizer Bunny. Mm-hmm. And I had a mini crash last year after I was done with my thesis, after I defended and submitted and finished grading for classes. And my body was just like, I'm checking out. I'm going on vacation whether you want to or not. Yeah. But it's also given me the opportunity to think about, you know, I'm pushing. It's quite nice to progress and to do well, but I haven't been spending as much time. My faith is very important to me. I haven't been spending as much time in prayer. I haven't been spending as much time with my wife, who's been my number one fan and supporter. And I haven't been checking in on family, not just my direct mother, father, sister, brother, but my cousins. One of my cousins, his whole family got COVID because his wife's a nurse and one of his daughters is a nurse. So they all got COVID and they're in New York. And that was in the heights of the pandemic in New York. So I was just thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to be losing a whole section of my family. So I think this pause has really taught me and others to really prioritize the things that are important. Take a look around at your life and look at what is most important in this time. And maybe when things quote unquote get better or get to our new normal, focus on maintaining those important things going forward. So I now play a lot more board games with my wife. I lose bitterly. And I have to check my heart at times to make sure that there is no ill will there. But it's been good to even just connect with family across the world. Mm-hmm. And just say, I haven't spoken to you in years. How are you? And I think this great pause for me has done that. And I think it's done it for quite a few people. Just provided new perspective as to what's most important.
I think so too. Who is the bravest leader you know? Why is that? And what elements of humanness do they display and allow others to display?
It's not a church service, but I'll definitely pull on my faith in this. And I will say when I look at the life of Jesus, mm-hmm. it kind of, to me, he's the bravest just because of how hard he loved others. And that way of loving others wasn't, oh, it's because you were affluent, or it's because you were nice to him, or it's because you had something to give. It's just because you are human. And that patience with others, that love for others, that care for others, that selflessness, that's what reminds me of what it's like to be human. It's that if we look at it, we're flawed, mm-hmm. but he just showed that no matter how flawed someone is, they're worthy of love. They're worthy of sacrifice. They're worthy of just spending the time to hear their story. They're worthy of me putting what I think is important on the back burner to make sure that they are okay. And that's one of the reasons why I'd say he's one of the bravest that I've ever seen.
What is an example of the best in humanity that you have seen during this time?
We've seen a mix in humanity during COVID. But I know Manitobans are known for being friendly. That little license plate says friendly Manitoba.
That's right.
But just seeing people care, seeing people sacrifice for others, seeing people make dinners for others, to provide groceries for others. I think those are some of the examples that I've seen, not just on television, but I've seen personally, where persons have used this as an opportunity to not just shut up shop and let me make sure me and my family are okay, but let's check in on other persons. Let's provide groceries for someone else. And I think this pandemic has done that for quite a few persons. It's brought out that humanness to say that, okay, it's not just about me. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that we're all in this together and that we're all making it. So those are just some of the examples that I've seen.
Who are two or three people who have influenced you and how did they impact your life?
I'll throw out a few. I already mentioned Dr. Alicia Strawn, my supervisor at the University of Manitoba. Just coming here, it's weird for me to see absolute strangers treat you as family. We know it happens, but normally people will do good for you if you can do good for them. But ever since you came, she's not just taken me on as her student. She's just treated me like family. Just made sure that my integration into life here in Winnipeg has been just seamless as possible, or as seamless could be. But not just that, on a professional level, she's just been so, her attention to detail, her commitment to excellence in whatever she does, the work that she does in giving back to youth in sport, in academia, as a Black female who has origins in the Caribbean. Just the way she has approached her work has also been a motivation for me to say, okay, I see an example of what I would want to be like when I get to that place. But she also blends that sports psychology and that coaching with that heart for others and that heart to care. So it's one of those when you look and you say, it is possible. It is possible to pursue your craft or pursue your career in a way that's not motivated by my salary, my status, and what I can get from it, but I can succeed in caring for others in these fields. So she's definitely one of those. I definitely have to highlight my parents. Yeah. Because they came from really humble beginnings. They sacrificed so much. That's something I would say to a lot of youth now. I look back in hindsight, and it's at these stages that I really appreciate some of the things that my parents have done for me, some of the sacrifice they made for their children, some of the things they denied themselves, some of the decisions they made that we might not have agreed with, but they were making it with us in mind in the long run. They are an essential part of who I am today. So many persons say, Craig, you're this, you're that, you're this. I can point to my parents, and in a funny way, my wife is just like, your father does that. Your father does that. Not in the nagging or the nitpicking or in the criticizing, but it's that he's had that much of an impact on your life without you even knowing it, that you'd have adopted some of his mannerisms. And he is a very big part of who you are now. So looking at my parents, the way they have just grounded us as their children, mm-hmm. and made sure that no matter how successful they were or how successful we would become, we would never forget the fact that family matters, that our faith matters, and that loving people and caring for people becomes paramount beyond selfish ambition and gain. And I've spoken about her so many times, but my wife, Kay, I say it, I don't know how I would have made it without her. We've been friends since university. Shout out to the persons who meet in university, you never know. We got married 10 years after meeting. So we were friends for 10 years, then we got married. So in about 2 years, in 2023, we would have known each other for 20 years. And she has been that solid foundation from day one. She's there to pray, to support, to encourage, to correct, to call me out. But everything she does is to make sure that we make it together. So she's definitely been a really integral part of this journey. And I'm very much thankful to be walking with her.
Well, it sounds like you have heroes around you have poured into you, and you're just pouring that out to the rest of us. And what a great steadfast foundation you have in your faith, which shines through in your desire to help others. And, you know, thank you for sharing with us, Craig. And again, I just think we're so fortunate to have you here in our province and in our country, and that you decided to make Canada home. And that you still have so much desire to learn and to work with others to make sure we're okay and to share your humanness with all of us.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here. And again, there's so many heroes that are around us that are doing such great work. So thank you for doing the work that you are doing. And I really hope to hear much more about the stories of so many around us here in Manitoba.
There you go. Craig Brown. What passion for others. What a heart for those new to Canada. And what an absolute perfect life experience to help them as well as anyone could. Thank you, Craig, for sharing your story and your insight on what it is truly like to be new here and yet to thrive here as well. And as for the winter, get ready. It always comes back. So stay warm. So another episode has come and gone. And already we're looking forward to the next one. Hope you can join us then too. Just head to heroesinourmidst.ca or head back to where you found this podcast. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Coop. Thanks for listening.